Hi, on today's episode, I'm joined with Jeremiah Campbell, and I cannot wait for you to hear this really raw, honest, and unfiltered conversation that we had. He speaks on everything from his addiction to his journey through self-discovery, entrepreneurship, how he navigates stress and anxiety. My intention for this episode was to just have that one person listening just feel less alone. So let's dive in. Hi, welcome to Power of the Middle Podcast. I'm your host, Merle Amos. After years of feeling stuck and letting fear and self-doubt call the shots, I've come to realize that true personal growth comes from embracing the journey and finding value in the middle moments. This podcast is your go-to for real talk. We dive deep into stories, share practical tools, and offer insights to help us break free from playing small and use our voice to live a life more intentionally. Get ready to explore the power of the middle between where you are and where you want to be. Together, we'll navigate the path towards confidence, success, and authenticity. So are you ready? Let's unlock your next level. Hi, welcome to Power of the Middle Podcast. Today, I am joined with a good friend and a very special guest who took time out of his very busy day to join us and to pour into us. Well, here he is, Jeremiah Campbell. Can you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. And so, yeah, it's an honor to be shared with your guests, a little bit about my story, who I am, and most importantly, how we can add value to other people's lives from the experiences that we've had. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun conversation.
Yes, I have a feeling we're going to go in many different directions. So we're just going to deep dive. We're going to dive in right now. Actually, there is one thing I never told you, speaking of pouring into others, is that when I was with you in Michigan, I saw the way that you communicated with each and every woman there and the way that they all of a sudden was so closed off. But then you came in. The way you communicated with each and every one of them and gave them eye contact and held space from them. Actually, I honestly learned so many communication skills just from watching you do that. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, thank you for, and that's great awareness on your behalf. I'm going to make sure Mallory, my wife, listens to this as well, because she'll tell you the opposite about my communication skills. Wow. Oh, that's it. But that's it though, right? It's the point. So presence heals, right? And so when you do your own work and you create it, so this is the way I look at it. Like if there's a gap, like if you're sitting here and I'm here, if I bring all my BS and stuff to wherever I'm at, I bring my stuff to here and you bring your stuff to here. So if I can, what I mean by stuff is the way you think, the way that you show up in life, the way, you know, the self-criticism, like that's your stuff. And if I can get rid of my stuff and remember the fact that like we're just two human beings communicating, I don't have any intention. I don't have any, there's nothing I need from you, but just to be present. And that provides peace and space in my heart that then I can open up and I can evolve and transform.
Wow, that's incredible. And I really found that the more that I not only watched you, but also did the work, and I went out and practiced communicating, the more I found that that was the key to inner happiness. Getting out of my head, getting out of my stuff, and really hearing someone else.
Yep.
So were you always like this? Give us a little backstory.
Well, they called me Eddie Haskell. Is what they called me. I always enjoyed being very passionate about things. Like I'm very passionate, I get excited about a lot of things. And it really brings energy and allows energy to flow. Right. And so we can go into the work and stuff, but it's like the reality is we're all wired a certain way. And I believe our souls picked this timeline in this place to come to this earth and to experience thing. And my only job in life is to experience. Like, that's it. I'm the one that dictates whether it's good or bad or this is, but it's like, it just is. And a person like me, I want to control the outcomes. I want to control, I really have to control the narrative of what Merle and your audience thinks about me. And then that's going to block me from any possibility of who I could become. So to answer the question, yes, I've always been like this to a sense, but it's always everything that you do in life is a skill set, right? And so if you have a skill set of making people feel comfortable, like how can I build and grow on that? And then how can I help them get what they want or what they need? And the better that I get at honing each and every one of my skill sets, the easier it is for me to flow through life rather than try to control it and restrict it.
Wow, that's very powerful.
Thanks.
Can you give us a moment in time that you realized something needed to change?
Yeah. How about like a minute ago?
I'm like, let's go back to when you were 20.
Oh, when I was 20. Okay. So from my parents got a really nasty divorce when I was 16. Some really terrible, horrific things happened in my life. And I didn't have a safe place to vent this stuff. And this is before, right? Like, so my mother is extremely emotionally unavailable. My dad is always the victim and he's a narcissist. And I didn't know these words till I got into therapy 3 years ago. Because my sobriety story, when I got sober at 20, my sobriety story, it's really like, it was 3 weeks after I turned 21 is when I got sober this time. And my whole life, people like in sobriety would say, I could never respect the fact that you were going to try to tell me how to stay sober if you've never used drugs or alcohol. Like, I don't got time for you. I got space for you. Like, you're a pencil pusher. You don't understand this. It wasn't until 14 years later that I had a panic attack when I started seeking professional help. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why didn't I take advantage of therapist and different types of modalities of, and then I really started to learn and realize like what in my life was creating the mess and the chaos, because my whole life that I built, and you've been to our home and you know our lives, and it's pretty magnificent, right?
Yes, magnificent.
Like, and it's such a blessing for me and so many other people, but I did it and built all this out of fear. And to go back and get rid of it. And so it was fear of what? Fear of not being enough. Fear of being inadequate. Like, those are the two biggest fears that people deal with. I'm never going to be enough. And I I'm going to always be inadequate. And I'm going to get rejected, right? And so as humans, we are born with two fears. Like, that's it. Everything else is manufactured. The fear of loud noises and the fear of falling. Like, those are the only two fears that like babies have.
Oh my God.
That's it. Everything else from there is learned. So if we can learn these things, we can unlearn these things. And so that's like the part of like, I believe that we grow up, our parents screw us up badly. But that's why we chose to come into this world, was whatever they went through was going to get passed on to us. The way we react to our kids, the way we yell at them, the way that we pick a spouse, like all of those things was part of the learning curve. And so like, I met Mallory when I was probably like 15. She was probably 14 when we met.
Right, your high school sweethearts.
No, we weren't. We didn't start dating until after high school.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I used to buy her booze and like with a fake ID and all that. And we were just friends.
Oh my God.
But the first day I met her dad, I told her dad, I was 15. I said, one day I'm going to marry your daughter. And so what is that? Like, how does that work out? Like, that's just... You know, I saw an energy in her. I saw, and I didn't know it then. I'm just like, I'm gonna marry that girl one day. Like,
that's connection,
right?
I think that with connection, when you connect with someone on that level, when you just see them and then know something, that I feel that's a soul connection. Yeah. And time can go by and years can go by, because you said you felt that at 15, but you didn't get together with her until probably years later.
Yeah, 5 years later.
Yeah, you just picked up where you left off. Like, time at that point with connection, I believe that time doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, like I was friends with her the whole time. Like, yeah. The whole time. Like, I would go and shoot heroin and be a knucklehead during the day. And I would like, I just love the fact that they had like a normal, it was weird. Like, now we understand, it's whatever. We won't go into her story. But it's like they laid around and watched like movies on a Sunday, and dad like napped and he snored and everybody like giggled about it. And I'm like, my household, like we threw shit at each other and the cops came and we beat each other with like, I remember calling the cops on my mom when I was like 10 years old because she was beating us with a hobo pie maker, like from camping. And the cops would come and they'd be like, Sherry, don't don't leave bruises. That's all I got to say. But beat the shit out of them kids. Like, beat those children. Wow. Because they.
You know, this conversation is so important, because if I look at you today, I would think that you had the perfect life. You grew up with the perfect parents and all the love, because I've seen you as a father. I see you as a husband, as an entrepreneur. And it's coming back to this quote I once heard. You are born looking like your parents and you die looking like your choices.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And how many people just use where they come from and what they were learned, and they're continuing to coast through life that way.
Yeah.
And I heard that you mentioned that you were addicted to heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that time, did Mallory, did she know, like, what was it like?
So I was about, my parents got divorced when I was 16. My dad did something absolutely inexplicable, horrible. And I had to kind of go into hiding. So he molested one of my friend's girlfriends, and I was 16. And I literally had to go into hiding, because if I got honest and when I was truthful about the situation, that means he would have went to prison and they probably would have killed him. Right. And so I have been living in the shadows of shame, but I didn't do anything. I was just an innocent bystander, but we create our reality. And so I was the victim when I was 16 and that happened to me, but I never allowed myself to process it and to think about these things. Right. So from 16 to 20, I went to rehab 5 times and I couldn't get sober. So it started with the OxyContin, and then it started, and I was doing them with my dad, and then it started, and then I couldn't afford those anymore. So then I got into the heroin, and I graduated high school, and I quit talking to my mom. So I didn't talk to my mom from 16 to 19. The divorce was horrendous. My little brother that's passed away and I moved in with my dad. My older brother and sister moved in with my mom. I didn't talk to anybody. And so I always had a mom growing up, whether she was emotionally available or not, she was there. And I went from having that to having nobody, and no aunts, no uncles, no nothing. So I was this scared little boy and had no idea. Well, what do scared little boys do? I did exactly what my dad did growing up. He acted like he was a man and tough. And so I showed up in this way that it was just rigid and all of these things. And so when I started dating Mallory, I'd used drugs, but I was a really sophisticated drug addict, to where I didn't have track marks and I didn't look like I was homeless. Right. And so I was able to do drugs, and I had my drug friends, and then I had my normal friends. And so I started dating her after my third rehab, and our first kiss was in a bowling alley. It was awesome. I bought her own little bowling ball and bowling shoes, and it smelled like bubble gum. It was wonderful. It had her name on it.
The exact memory.
Yeah. And so she ended up, she drove me to my last treatment center. And like my little brother died. I was sober for like 90 days. And I remember, you know, her saying, "Hey, what do you need?" My little brother died. I'm like, "You know what I need? I'm like, I can't afford to pay my phone bill. Like, will you pay my phone bill?" So Mallory paid my phone bill. And the funny part is, it's that phone number that she paid is still my business phone number today. One of the business phone numbers today. And that happened, you know, almost 18 years ago. But she drove me to rehab. She bought me cigarettes. But she was always there. So like when we talk about it now, especially when our couples work, is like, she knew the minute we started dating that like that was it. Like, we were just going to be together. I make her tell me that story all the time.
She's incredible. I have a close relationship with her. So she is just incredible. That's amazing, that level of support. And, you know, now we're still facing so much of that, where people are turning to drugs because they want to avoid feeling.
Yeah.
Now, where they're constantly in their heads, like, how do you remove the stigma of getting help, asking for help, being in that helpless moment?
You have to want it, most importantly.
Ooh.
Like, you actually have to want it. Like, change is one of the hardest things. It's inevitable. And when you get sober or you stop using vices, so like anything is a vice. Like, my first drug of choice was fantasy. Like, when I was a little boy, I would sit there and wander, you know, like looking at the stars and the moon, just wandering in Superman and cartoons. Like, and what does it do is it takes you out of your present situation and takes you somewhere else. It's like a time traveling device. And people get caught in that. And what happens is then we develop egos, right? Like, people say all the time, like, "Oh, look at this little child running. And I wish I had that kind of energy." And I'm like, "Did you know why they have all that energy?" And they're like, "Well, yeah, because they're kids." And I'm like, "No, like, there's two reasons why they don't have that energy. That kid doesn't give a shit what you think about him or what he thinks about you. Ego. And two, he has no sexual facilities. Or she has no, there's no way to expel the energy. So where does it go? It moves. It doesn't get created or destroyed. It just moves. Energy, emotion, energy moving, moving energy. How do we move this? And so what happens is we ingest drugs and alcohol, right? And so you know a lot about our plant medicine stuff and all this. And I was with a shaman and he said to me, he goes, Jeremiah, he goes, did you know alcohol is a plant medicine? And I said, what? I go, no. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, where is it made? How do you make alcohol? It comes from hops and herbs and all these things, right? And what happens when you drink? Oh my God, Merle, I love you so much. We got to do this all of the time, girl. Like, let's have another one. And then what happens? You just keep drinking. And what happens? All your stuff comes up. All of it comes out. And the truer identity of who you are starts to then show up. Your anger, your regret, your fear, your disappointment. Disappointment's a big one for me. Like my dad always disappointed me because he never was the man that he could have aspired to be. And I'm like, well, the minute I say that I'm disappointed. So now here's the narrative. My dad, my mom, ex significant others have this emotional attached to me. So then what am I doing? I'm bringing everything from the past and pushing it forward. So to answer your question again, it's what do you actually want to change? Do you actually want to do something about it? And then it's like, okay, what do? I'm powerless. I can't use drugs and alcohol for the meantime because I have a chemical bond that my body will go into detox in order to do that. Or you're unwilling to change the people that you hang out with and what you're doing in your life because the pain of that, the pain of losing them is greater than the pain of actually going through a change.
Isn't that interesting that the substance that you're using to avoid ends up bringing up everything? I really believe that the body holds everything. It does.
The body keeps the score. Yeah, absolutely.
The body keeps the score. It really does. Things come up. Like,
have you read that book?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
but I do.
Oh.
Gotta read it.
A long
I didn't
one.
Read it. Not yet. It's a good one, right? Going back to your panic attack, I know it was all of a sudden you felt anxious. I've heard this story and that you were on a beach in Florida and you are sober. You were at the time for what, 15 years at that time when the panic attack came through. Can you talk about that and how you moved through it and not relapse?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So for me, there's no solution in drugs and alcohol. Like that's played out. Like, there's no success for me. There's no business for me using drugs and alcohol. Like every once in a while, I'll get a thought like, oh, you should have a beer. And I'm like, you don't even like beer. Like, what are you going to do? Like, because I built a model when I was a kid. Like, that's what successful people do. They drink their on the rocks and they do this and they do that. And I'm like, every single person has a different form of what success looks like. And so it didn't even cross my mind when I was in my panic attack state. Early on in sobriety, I remember many times where the obsession, it's an obsession, right? It overpowers your body, right? You don't have a choice at that point. I remember driving down to the city of Detroit to buy heroin and like literally crying because I could not turn the car around. I couldn't physically not use. Like, and I remember avoiding the times that I did have a cell phone or I took somebody's car, driving down and not having the actually turn around. And then I would avoid everybody's calls. I would avoid anything. And the minute I injected, then I would then be, it would just calm you down.
Wow.
And so the nervous system, there's a book called Power Versus Force by Dr. David Hawkins. And what he did was he found out the reason people use drugs and alcohol is to quiet their body so their true soul can transcend. Why do you think they call it spirits? Because when you drink, it brings out your soul level. And when you drink, it lets your guard down. And when your guard is down, those dark entities can come into you. And then now these things start intertwining with you, your energies. And it's like, whoa, what happened here? Like, that's why I live in a bubble. There's very few people that I let into my bubble. And it's like, because I'm so protective of what we've built.
Yes. Can you talk about a little bit of what you build? Because you own a company, you are an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So I got out of rehab and I was laying tile for my neighbor. He was paying me like $8 an hour. I was gone for like 12 hours, but he only paid me for eight. And I went to a 12-step meeting, and this guy's like, "Hey, you want a job?" And I didn't even ask him what we were doing. And I was like, "Sure," because he was successful. He had a Red Bull and a pack of store-bought cigarettes. And I was rolling my own cigarettes, and I had a $1 Rip It energy drink. So I'm like, "Oh, this guy's successful. I'm going to hang with him." Like, that was my form of success back then, right? And he taught me, we went canvassing, and I knocked on the doors on that side of the street. He knocked on that side. And I went and got a customer to, you know, agree to like a $300 project. And he gave me a commission on it. And I came home, and there was like money on the table. And I'm like, "Where did this come from? I thought my mom gave it to me." I was 19. And he's like, "Yeah, man." Like, and so that he really taught me that. And so now, you know, we have several different companies. My main passion and love is humans, right? Like, I love human beings. I love when people really can see who they are. So I have a brick and concrete company. We have real estate, all this stuff. But what we do is we're in the human development space, financed by Masonry Repair. So we're in the business of changing lives rather than just, you know, fixing people's brick. And because I got just like part of the panic attack was, and I never answered your question around that. Like, the panic attack was, we built our dream home. The business was not doing good, and I didn't want to. I was the victim, and I was letting everybody disappoint me to perpetuate the story from the past. Like, that happened to me. And the minute that I say that happened to me, I'm allowing what happened to me to control me in the present moment. And if it's controlling me now, it's creating my future. Okay, wait a minute here. So if I'm living this life, I have everything, but I bought my dream car, like all of these things. And I would pull up to my house and I'd be like, "This sucks. Is this it?" That was the start of the panic attack, when I was like, no distractions. The distractions went away. The house was built. There was nothing else there. And I'm like, wait a minute. Am I playing God right now? Like, am I trying to like think that like the things are creating happiness? Like, and if I'm not reliant on God to guide me, to steer me, to give me downloads, to pay attention to what's going on. You know, everybody has filters, especially women. I love women because they have the ability. You guys are so receptive and to frequency and energy. Like, I can walk, I'll just call Mallory. I'm like, "Now, like, hey, is this a yes or no?" And she'll be like, "Nope." And I'm like, "Thank you. You just saved me, you know, 3 hours of wondering." And to be able to experience that. So like, when I check in with myself, I'm like, "How does this decision feel? That doesn't feel good. That feels a little icky. All right. Is it coming from the story of the past, or is it coming from where do I want to go? What does that look like? How can I get there?" And then you start working towards it.
Yeah, working towards it, doing the work, right? Yeah. That looks different for everyone. And I think there's such a, you know, when I started doing the work, I really leaned into, what can I add? Like, I was viewing it as a checklist, like most moms do, and even women do. And I was like, okay, checklist. Morning routine, workout. And then I was like, all this adding and adding, when really I needed to stop doing. Mm-hmm. I needed to stop certain thought loops, and I needed to stop certain behavioral patterns. I needed to create space to heal and to grow.
Mm-hmm. So how did you learn how to do that?
How did I learn how to do that? It's funny because I have the same question. I became a mom. And I looked around and I, you know, was loving it. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I grew up in a tight Jewish community, and everything is just laid out for us, right? Like a checklist. Mm-hmm. And I just, one day I was sitting with my two girls and I looked around and I was like, is this it? That's why I was like, I got the chills when you were talking. And I said, no, this cannot be it. I am not going to go down this path that is fully laid out for me. And it's a beautiful path, but it's not my path. Mm-hmm. And it's not my conditioning and my thoughts. And my parents also were divorced. They got divorced when I was 16. And it was at the time a very shameful thing in the community. And to just really understand that there was no shame. That was placed on me for the way I grew up. And then I just worked through it, and I hired my first life coach, and you know her, Christina LaCure. And through her, I met Mallory. And oh, the journey with Mallory has just been so expansive and level. And now I'm actually in this space where I'm in a space of action now. I'm not allowing my feelings or fear or self-doubt to dictate what I'm going to do every day. Mm. So that's, and I think that I just keep going. It's not linear. It's such a beautiful journey. But you know what I could tell you is that I'm experiencing life.
Yeah. And most people die before they ever experience it.
Yes.
And you miss the whole point of it. Like, we build, we create, we grow, we families build, create, and then you die, right? Like, it's inevitable. Everybody's going to die. What's the point? Like, what is it? Like, what is the point? The point is to experience what is. And we're human beings. And the world and these dark societies force us to believe that we're human doings. And I have to do this and do this. And it's like, no, like, where are you creating from? Like, what are you creating and where is it getting created from? And I'm like, if I believe in scripture and I believe that God, I am a child of God, and God, and the only way I can find God is through me because he's in my heart, but he's everything everywhere. Okay, wait a minute here. And I have to really start looking outside of the churches and the paradigm of like, what is it actually? Because we all have those connections. We can all get those down. We're all psychic to a point where it's like, I knew that I needed to take my foot off the gas. I just did it. And a kid came running out. You know, there's too many ways and there's too many real life stories that took place in and around my life that I can deny it. But once my ego gets in place, you're like, oh, that was just a coincidence. And oh, that was like, and that's the point of I don't, that's like really finding and gripping into wanting to change and then doing something about it.
Yes. And I want to talk about the spiritual piece of that, because I was born, it's just like in my blood, my faith, my trust in God, my belief in God, actually, the trust I built over time through the challenges, through the moments. And I also viewed my religion as a checklist. Once I really detached from the checklist and opened my heart and connected to God on such a level where I really feel like everything is happening for me. I'm not just saying that because yeah. People throw quotes like, I want to be a success. I want to be the best version. I have faith. No, no, no. There's one thing to always logically say you have faith. There's a whole nother level when you feel it. Mm-hmm. The feeling piece is where people truly try to avoid feeling. They're running away from feeling. They look at it as a weakness.
Yeah, it is. And you just covered a lot there too, because again, you got to want to feel. And then like, how do you feel? And like, nobody in the planet ever will ever know what happiness and joy feels like for Merle. Like, that's how special it is. Like, nobody will ever know what it feels like for the sun to hit your skin. And like, that's the way God designed it. Like, that's how truly precious all of this is. And really allowing yourself to create that space. Like, most people don't know. Like, I know the levels of my success in life outside of my spiritual, my family, the things that people see, right? Like, because there's one side of spirituality where you're like, I don't need anything, and like this hippieism, and I just want to change in culture. And there's nothing wrong with that. Powerful you are is the space that you create. So the life that I've built is wonderful. I love it. But my good is now the enemy of my great, because now I have something to lose. Well, what do I have to lose? There's nothing to lose if all my job is to experience the good, the bad, the ugly. Like, my job is to be present with it, experience it. Can this meat suit, this ancestral meat suit that we wear, right? Like that's what it is. Like, and the crazy thing is we're all space anyways. Like, 99.99% of us is just space, vastness. So you take a cell and you take a human cell. We got like trillions of them in our body, right? And you take them and you take every human being on this planet and you get rid of the space between the cells. The entire human population will fit in one sugar cube. That's how much space we are. And when they talk about quantum entanglement, they talk about all these things, like, and so there's scientific proof to, and I'm like, great, that's wonderful, but I'm still not feeling. I can know. Part of my trauma response is to do research and educate. I love it. I get freaked out. I like rabbit holes, right? And it's like, that's great. And that'll give me the knowledge. Well, what does knowledge do? Knowledge actually keeps me safe. Well, Merle, what you're saying is wrong because I know this. And it's like, wait a minute here. Like, did I learn these things to just throw it back in somebody's face or throw it back in my own face to keep me stuck? So then I had to go to, when I got my panic attack, I hired a coach And I was really big into Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. And I went to two of his events, and I was the same way as you. I was up at 3:30 in the morning. I'd meditate for an hour. I'd work out for an hour. I'd do all my writings and journalings. I did it for 3 years straight. I used to make Mallory come up and when she was, you know, doing her workouts for her competing stuff, and we'd meditate together. And I was so rigid and so bound up, right? Like constricted, just like, ugh. And I would be angry and I'd outlash. And I'm like, all of these things, and that's the self-development cycle that you get into. It just adds more and it adds more and it adds more and it adds more. And it's like you keep pushing the goal line farther away. And as it grows farther away, you become more angry and discontent that it's not happening. And so you got to slow down to create the space. And this coach would make me sit out in my backyard and he would make me just feel. Stop meditating and just feel. Close my eyes and feel. Like, what does it feel like to be sitting in this chair? What does it feel like for the wind to touch your skin, the sun? What does it feel like to hear the birds? Because once this moment passes, it's never going to be back. So we take it for granted, the way the waves come in, the way all of these things are. And I'm like, if I can find peace and contentment in that, I can bring that back into the material world and create the happiness and fulfillment that I was originally looking for, that all of my life and world tells me it's something else.
Wow. I mean, do you know how hard it is for people to just sit still for 30 seconds?
Yeah.
30 seconds. They can't, you know, they're addicted to the distractions.
Yeah. Well, the neurochemicals that are released during a distraction, I mean, they're wonderful, right? Like it's 10 times more addictive than, you know, happy emotions, these sad emotions, and they pull us down. And I think our creator made us that way to where we can overcome it. Like our job here is to wake up and get out of what we like the routine that, you know, every thought that you have, like they say 95% of your thoughts are repeated thoughts from the day before, right? And 65,000 thoughts a day that you have, and it's repeated. It's like, what do I want to do? I want to wake up to what my life is. What is it? It's like whatever you want it to be. What is it? How am I going to do it? What do I need? What new level of understanding am I going to have to get to where I want to go? And that's like when people start asking themselves that question, like, who am I? Like, who am I? Like, and then just like ponder on it. And like, no matter what you come up with, you're right. Like, no matter what, if I'm an asshole or I'm this, I'm that. Yes, you are. And the world's going to give you more of that. Or like, where do I want to go? Who do I want to be?
That's right. The world will give you more of who you are. And there's also so much power in that you can change it. It's in your, certain things are just in your control. Mm-hmm. Now I'm controlling. I'm so many. And I could speak from that because I was just so, I was in such a state of anxiousness all the time and overwhelm and control and disconnection from myself. If I asked myself, who am I? That gave me anxiety. Like I mm-hmm. just started to begin feeling to the point where I became allergic to it. I was breaking out in hives. I didn't understand. I had like, you know, episodes of GERD and I would go and they would tell me it's stress. I'm like, what? And I think at that moment, I was like, I'm not going to continue my life living this way because I never felt anxiety. But it was just, you know, I was coasting, right? Autopilot. And then I would go and I was opened up to the whole world. Instead of college, I went to work in the city and I'm actually spent so many years really getting out of my box, where that's when I began to speak to other people that didn't come from my background. And that's when I feel like I'm going back to like, we're all connected. And I was the one that would speak to them and, you know, teach them about my holidays or Shabbat. And really, they just didn't know. And I always thought they didn't care or they don't want to know or they look at me differently based on where I come from or who I am. But really, when you have a conversation with another human, they really just don't know. And you're opening up this place where you're able to even step into more of who you are and having them understand who you are. Yeah. Kind of went on a tangent there, but
it's beautiful. And it's crazy. Like we're so connected that you have an illusion that you're Merle and I have an illusion that I'm Jeremiah, and that we're going to pretend just for this moment in this time frame that you're Merle and I'm Jeremiah. And we have an unwritten agreement that that's just what it is. Like, no, that's not me. Like, this suit that I'm wearing brings everything up from lineages and from eons, brings it into this, and this is what I'm wearing. And I'm like, okay, why can't I feel? What, first off, how do I even know what feeling feels like? So I go to research and I go to therapists. I'm like, how does it feel to feel? And then they'll tell you like a clinical thing that they wrote up. The same people that wrote that wrote all the other stuff that we believe in too. And I'm like, well, wait a minute here. Like, my goal with our children is to get them to be emotionally responsible and to be critical thinkers. Outside of that, like, everything's available by phone now, right? And so when I look at it, like, okay, why do I not know how to feel? Like, God wouldn't have designed me the way he did perfect and you to not allow us to feel. So what happened? Well, I was X amount of years old. I was this. And I mean, I can show you the picture and I'm sure you've seen it. Like, I have a picture of me when I was 5 years old on the back of my, like, right there.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I literally have that because something happened to me where it was unsafe to feel, right? It was unsafe for me to tell the truth because my dad would have went to prison. It was unsafe for me to go to my mom because I grew up very checklist too. Like, my parents would beat the hell out of us for on the way to church. And then
that would have rolled today.
Yeah. Right. Like, and like, then we would go to church and then we would never talk about God or Jesus. We pray at night, but it was very like, okay, checklist. I'm going to heaven now that I went to church. Checklist. Like, my kids look like the presentable, and I never understood it before I could even comprehend it. Like, wait, we're different people in our house than when we're outside of our house. And I'm like, and it wasn't until way many years later when I'm like, oh my God, we were fake. And like, that's why I was like struggling and fighting. It wasn't safe. So now, being 37 years old, sitting here today, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like, why was it unsafe for me to feel? Okay, well, if I'm still not feeling, then that 5, 7, 10, 15 year old boy is still in charge. And he's driving the bus. My dude doesn't have a driver's license, but he's running the show and he's out there self-sabotaging me, my relationships, my friends, my marriage, all of it. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a minute here. Like, calm down, calm down. Okay, what is it? What is it? What is it that he needed? What is it that he didn't get? And then I get to come from here and be like, you are safe. Like, it's okay to feel. And then accept the fact that my favorite mantra, and I just learned this not too long ago by a guy named Bashar, and he's a channeler. So some people agree with his stuff, some don't. But he said, I am who I am, and that is enough. I am who I am, and that is enough. And like, what would life be like? So here's the thing. Like, you got lineages forever, but you're the one chosen person, Merle, that chose to wake up. One person that chose to wake up and change the history. But because you're not only changing the history, you're not only changing the future, but you're changing the history. You're allowing all of your ancestors, because you're going in, you're the brave soul to go in and feel and allow those emotions to come through so then you can evolve. But you're single-handedly raising the consciousness, not only of your community, but the entire world. And it takes us light workers to come in and say, oh, there's darkness. There's darkness. You don't need to be sad anymore. Boom. And you bring light to it. What happens? You can be in a pitch, like, you can bring darkness into a light room and it does nothing, but you bring a little bit of light into a dark room and everything illuminates. That's the power of God that's coming in and creating these things. And I'm like, I choose that. Like, stuff's cool, but like, I want more of that.
And honestly, you can't even see the light without the dark.
Correct. You need it.
You need the darkness.
Correct.
You need the challenges. Only through challenges do you grow. I really truly believe that.
Life would suck without challenges. Like, what would you do? Like it would be monotonous. Like, what would you do if you didn't have challenges?
Also, like, feelings of, let's say, you know, just a basic feeling. Because, you know, I work with women and so many of them are just like, I'm down. I said, okay, lean into that. What do you mean lean into that? Feelings are an indicator of where your growth is. Right? Yeah. They're an indicator of where you need the work, the relationships that you have, the comments that people tell you. That's a moment of introspection, of self-reflection, versus the latter of, she said this, and why did she say that to me? And then you call someone else, and then you call someone else, and now you're compounding this one comment or this one feeling into this whole, it's not even true anymore. Because now you created, versus like, that was said to me, either you say, let them, or you say, that's an invitation to see, you know, what's up, what's going on over here. And so many people, if they just paused and just did that one pause of that one question and just gain that self-awareness, can just save them so much emotional, mental energy.
Yeah. And the problem is they most can't until they hire somebody like you that can walk them through and create the space and hold the space for them to go see. Because if they can't see it, then it's not real. And I'm like, well, we live in a world that if you can't see it, you can't believe that it's real. Right. And so I live by a few phrases. Pause. What a pleasure. Pause. What a pleasure. That's it. Like, no matter what's going on, it's only a pleasure.
So what I was, well, yeah, what, like, you have to want to explore and be curious, because the little boy or little girl in you will not let you in because it was unsafe. So you have to, like, gamify it, right? Like, hey, you want to play a game? That's what I say to myself. I'm like, you want to play a game? Like, what if you didn't think that? And I would start messing with it. And so if you don't have space with, like, being an amazing, like, having a coach like you to create the space to hold for somebody to get curious, because, like, one of the biggest challenges, especially with women, is you see, is nobody was ever curious with them. Nobody would ever, like, wondered what this little girl was thinking and feeling. And same thing with little boys. Like, we're crazy and running all over the place, and nobody ever took the time to, like, how does that make you feel? And what does that mean to you? And then we always just tell them, indoctrinating them, that what they're doing is wrong and this is bad and all these things. And it's like creating the space to get curious, to go in, to ask that little boy or girl what they need. But then just allowing that space to be there, well, then things will start to surface. As your nervous system calms, new things surface. I mean, every day new things surface to me. And I get a different perspective on it, right? Mm. And so in life, like, people always say that, like, your preference or your perspective, I mean, it's through my eyes. And when I stop looking at things through my eyes and I'm like, okay, I don't agree with Mallory because, okay, there's another one. You be right, I'll be happy.
Oh my gosh, when you told me that, I have to stop you there, because when I heard that from you, that was the time where, you know, all the political stuff were going on, and I was always, you know, I'm very passionate about the way certain things are going. And I was just like, you know what? You be happy, I'll be right. Yeah. That just took off a complete, like, I felt like just this whole load came off. Yeah. I don't feel the need to argue. I don't feel the need to prove to anyone my beliefs and my thinking.
If you truly believe it.
Yes.
So that's the thing. Like, people don't need to believe Merle. They need to believe Merle believes Merle. And once you believe it, I can't steer you wrong. Like, you got your beliefs. And so when I truly believe in something, I don't need to sell it to anybody. I don't need to get them to agree with what I'm doing. I don't need them to. And that creates freedom, because I'm like, I don't understand your methods, but, like, it's through my lens that I think things the way things should be done. That's when control comes in. I need to control the narrative that you have on me and my family. I need to, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute here. Like, why am I trying to control any of this instead of just allowing it to be? So if I don't, and I'm just like, take myself and I'm like, okay, Merle and I disagree, or Mallory and I disagree. Let me sit in her shoes. Let me get behind her eyes and wonder what it's like from her perspective. And then you can win any argument. You can win it, because there's nothing to win or lose. Like just because you think you're right doesn't mean we can't still get along. Like, we're all in this, the crazy wars and all, it's all political. Like, when I sit down and I serviced Detroit, the inner city of Detroit, when all the BLM stuff was going on, all kinds of crazy stuff. And I was down there interacting with African-American people. And there was not one problem ever. And people, like, ever.
It's crazy.
And I would ask them, I'm like, what is going on with this? And it was usually the affluent people, white people in the suburbs that were like fighting this. And it's like, wait a minute here. Like, we're all the same. Like, the color of your skin, like, that's just a different narrative that you have. And I'm like, all right, so we're cool. We're not beefing. And I'm like, the beef only happens here. Like, if I can overcome that, and that's why we meditate, and that's why we write, and that's why we journal, and have coaches and all those things. And it's like, if I can get this right.
It's like a faucet once you turn it on. But I would still rather be living life this way versus just, again, just going through life. I'd rather be living it. I came from, I want to fix, even as a mom and as a woman, I want to fix everything. And through, you know, going through the coaching intensive course that I did, oh my gosh, that was very intensive. And knowing all these modalities, I all of a sudden removed this judgment piece and removed the need to fix. And also I removed assuming and mind reading. So all this is really the work that I did. And I really believe that it's all skills that you can build, you can change, and it's a practice. It's not one thing, and it is hard, and you have to go through it. But the other side of it, it is the middle, right? The power of the middle. And I think that's why I even started this podcast, because I wanted to shed a light on these middle moments, whether it's through entrepreneurship, through motherhood, through becoming someone or changing something. I found that no one spoke about these moments. Everyone just thinks it's like this shiny object that, oh, they were just born like that, right? Today you just proved you were not born with what you have today. Mm-hmm. You were not born as who you are today. And I think that's why it's such an important conversation that we are having.
It is. I mean, like, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey. It's about who you become. And so, like, if you took in the wealth and distributed equally to everybody within 2 to 3 years, the people that are wealthy would have it again. And it's just the way that things work out. And I look at it, there's like 3 levels, right? And you have like the first level, which is like 97 or 8% of the world population, where they're consciously unaware. Like they have no, they're just going through life, you know, paying their bills, having affairs, doing whatever they want to do, drugs and alcohol, hate their spouses, disrespect their kids, disrespect themselves. Like that's like most of the world. And there's good people in there too, right? There are that don't do those things. Then the next level, the middle level, right, is the people like you doing the work. That's the conscious awareness people. That they're the ones noticing the small nuances, right? And that's bringing the awareness. Just because I'm aware of my actions, just because I'm aware of the work, doesn't mean I'm going to go to the next level. And the next level is letting go. And so between 2 and 1, you actually have to let go. And like, I actually have to say, like, God, whatever you plan for me, like, let's go. And I don't know how that's going to look, but I know it's going to be different. And it's up to me to show up to that. And that's the level that is, I mean, they're equally all have their challenges. But like Dolores Cannon talks about it all the time. She says, there's nobody farther on, below or above each other. We're just at different paces of learning and different places of learning. And that's it. Like, that's all we're doing here. And so to really pay attention to where I am, and I'm like, yeah, Jeremiah, like, you know so much knowledge about so many things. But wonderful. Like, what does that mean? Like, when you pass, when you die, like, it's all gone. Like, what did you experience? And what did you let go? And what did you allow to flow in and through your life? Because none of it's ours anyways. Like, one day somebody's going to knock this house down that we built. Like, one day, like, all of this comes to an end. Mm. And was it worth it? Like, was it worth it? And so the pain of regret is so much bigger than the fear that I have today. But like, look back and be like, I could have done this and I could have done that. I could have been this person. And then I'll say, well, I'm married and I have kids. And I'm like, okay, cool. Victim. Good job, bud. I saw you do that. Like, oh, this is exactly who, where, what I'm supposed to be. I can focus on my work all night, or I can spend time with the kids. I can be present with Mallory, or I can, and it's like, those are all choices. And when you're a victim, you don't think you have choices. And people like me don't like to make decisions, believe it or not. I'd rather push it off. And what that means is I can replay the old story of the past. The minute that you make a choice, right? Stress and anxiety, in my opinion, are caused from one place, truly. I have a choice or a decision that I have to make that I'm unwilling to make, and I'm going to sit with it. Because the minute you make a choice, whether it's to get sober, whether it's to quit your job, whether it's to whatever it is, the minute you make that choice, you would instantly have to apply action. And if you don't apply action, you didn't actually make the choice. And so when I get anxiety or stress, and I'm like, I check in with myself and I'm like, okay, what's going on in my life that my soul doesn't agree with? My body, whatever, you can wait. What's my soul? Like, what's my soul wanting to express, to experience, to do? And is it coming from a healthy place? Okay, cool. Make that choice.
Oh my, so many people are stuck in indecision and they feel comfortable there. And I'm like, just decide, make that choice and make it from a place of, you know, the more that we strip away the layers or the limiting beliefs and they tune into like what they believe, the easier the choices become. And I think that the scary part of making a choice is like taking the leap into the unknown because we can't control the outcome. So many choices I made and I was just like, all right, God, let's go. Here we go. And those are the best experiences of my life.
You trusted yourself, right? And a lot of it breaks down to worthiness. Because if I make this choice, am I worthy of that? And if you have a story, so every story that you have for yourself, there is a reward for that story, right? And so when we go in and work with couples or whoever, it's what's the reward about the story that you're telling yourself right now? Okay, I'm unworthy. Well, if I'm unworthy, what does that mean? Then my dad and everybody was right. So there's always a reward for thinking like if this guy got a silver spoon handed to him and he, you know, he did whatever, right? So people still go after Trump and they're like, well, his dad gave him $1 million loan, right? And it's like, but if he didn't take that loan, so the story is, if I had this, then I would do that. And that's the have, do, be model, right? If I have this, I will do this, then I will be that. And we actually have to change the management, right? And say, okay, if I be this, then I will do that and I will have this. And it's completely shifting that model, but it has to come from a place of I'm worthy of that. Like, and if you're living like news, like you are worthy, like you listener are worthy to then trust in yourself enough to make those changes. So you don't have to do it, but that's the point of living, is to wake up to that nuance. Like I am worthy. What could I build? And I think that's like literally the point of life.
Oh, 100%. But so many people get stuck in what other people think and they get stuck in the standards that we have to keep up with. And I think that that causes them a lot of anxiety and social anxiety, and they're just living life to just keep up. What would you tell them?
Get some haters. You're never going to make everybody happy. And so when you start like, so it's being selfishly unselfish, right? To honor yourself. And so like when I have challenges in my marriage, it's because I'm trying to be somebody I'm not, or I'm trying to put somebody else's needs. And it's funny because the minute I take care of my needs and Jeremiah's taking care of, I have my mask on first, then everybody around me can it gives them space to move. Because if not, I have to hold them into a certain level of, I need you to do this. And the minute you need somebody to do anything, you're giving all of your power away. And so it's especially for anybody that's listening that's been in a long-term relationship or a marriage, when it's like that partner has you in their head being something or somebody, whether it's a jerk or the best lover or whatever it is, they have you in this paradigm, this box. And the whole point is to get out of that box and to say like, no, I'm actively changing. And so people say it all the time when they're working with their significant other, and it's like, no, like he's gonna, like, let's see how long that's gonna last. Or he's never going to actually change.
Definitely.
Or he's not going to want to do that, right? And it's like the minute, and we learn this a lot in medicine work, because the minute that I heal something, I'll watch something release out of Mallory. Or the minute that I go in and do something, somebody else in the journey space will be like, whoa, what was that? I felt that. And I'm starting to release those things because we're all connected. And when I create the space in me and I stop putting Mallory in this box that you're this mom and you're this and you're this, And I say like, no, like you're just a human experiencing just like me. Like how special is that? And we get to do this hippie shit together. Like we get to be present, like, whoa. And then I can get a different view and different perspective. And I can start looking at it through her eyes. Like I no longer need to be afraid. Like no matter how successful she takes her business or doesn't, like she's still going to be the same girl to me. I'm still going to be the same individuals. And so then when you create that space and level of trust, like no matter how much we change, like we got each other because we got ourselves. Like I got me for the first time in my life. Like I got this. And it's not like I don't need you. It's I got this. Like this where I'm at right now, like I'm content. I'm full. Like I'm brimming with love. I have a lot to give away, and that causes other stresses. But like,
yeah. So what are some tactical tools that you that you can give our viewers that are going through stress?
Yeah. You have to, like it's a skill set, right? Like being present. Like you can't just go and be present. I went to a seminar one time. It was a guy on concentration and focus. He's like, when's the last time somebody taught you how to concentrate or focus? Like you're not taught those things. And it's really bringing the awareness. So if you're sitting there in the car or something, to like pay attention to the way that your fingers are touching the steering wheel. Or when you get to touch your kid's hand and hold your kid's hand, like feel the vibrational frequency. Stop and really like think into it. And what's going to happen is your nervous system's going to kick on and say, whoa, 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 not safe. Don't go there. Your mind, your brain, your being, your consciousness knows like two things to do. And that's it. To keep you alive. And that's it. Known, unknown, safe, unsafe. That's it. And it's just like, you only see like at any second, you can see like 11 million things. And your brain can only actually comprehend like 30,000 of them. So what actually is going on around us? We have no idea. Like we don't know because we can't, it's too much for our 3D body experience to experience. So to bring it back to what can you do if you're feeling stress, you know, move your body. Women, do some aesthetic dancing, move your body. I like to sing. Like, and I'm absolutely probably the worst singer in the entire world. And I love it. And I love me for that because I'm able to move energy. I got home from a trip Friday and we had a 4-hour drive and I came home and I was like really fastly moving. Like, and that's what I do. I'm a doer. Ooh, that's like my thing. And so Mallory was sleeping and she goes in the bed and I'm moving. And so we like, you know, decompressed later. We're chatting and she's like, I'm like, yeah, I didn't realize that. My mom taught me that, but that's how I move energy. And she goes, I challenge that. Did you move the energy or did you move with the energy? And I'm like, ooh. Like, wow. Like, and it's just bringing a different awareness. But had I been triggered or upset and angry that she was sleeping and I had to do this, instead of being like, no, pause, what a pleasure. Like to get to be able to experience at this time. So then I get to look at it from a different view and say, wow, I've never been here. That's not how I move energy. So then I got to sit present with myself. I got to sit with myself. I got to say, asking myself, what is it that I'm looking for? You know, and then write it down. And then so these are going to continue to change as your body starts to let you get deeper and deeper into it.
Yeah. I always say breath work has truly, honestly, the one thing that has, like, because meditation, I was very, like, listening. But breath work moved the energy. It moved just so much in my body as well. And you have to move it either through talk, either through movement, either through breath work. It's so true. But I think that the most powerful thing is that knowing that you are entirely up to you.
Did you know that solar eclipse that just happened?
Yeah.
It happened. Like, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but it happened for you. Like, it was special just for you. Did you know that the entire universe revolves around you, Merle? No. The entire universe. I'm dead serious. You're creating it. So that means it's all through, like, you've created all of this. The good, the bad, whatever you want to call it. Like, you created all of this. Like, that's how special these things are.
So special.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really, just to go back to like that power of the pause, which is such a big deal for me, because that 1 second, that one opening could really change everything, whether you're making decisions.
Have you heard the Viktor Frankl quote? They give credit for Viktor Frankl between stimulant and response.
Oh, yes, of course.
The space, right? And it's like, that's exactly what you keep that describing. That's the middle. Like, there's a space there. Can your nervous system allow you to rest into that and breathe into that space? Breath work is one of the most magical modalities you can possibly do. And breath is the first thing you do when you come into this world. The last thing you'll do is your breath. Oof. And you'll follow your breath from that point to this point, right? And so the breath work, the most powerful thing about breath work is you release trapped emotions subconsciously. And there's nothing there to hold on to. So you just feel lighter. Like, I remember finishing a breathwork session one time. I was in Texas and I just heard my own voice come in, right? And it was, you are all you've been looking for. Like, it sounded like me, but did you ever like stop and think about the voices in your head? Like, first off, they're never nice. They're always like negative. And I'm like,
that inner critic.
Who's listening? Who's talking? If I can hear the talking, then who's listening? Like, it's perplexing when you really stop and be like, what is going on up there? Like,
is it even true?
Yeah.
Is it true? Even
who's
true?
Who's buying it?
Yeah.
You are.
And also being an observer. Really observe if you're thinking these thoughts and you're allowing it to dictate your actions or even the way you're feeling. Just observe. Look at it from a disassociated state. I really say, look at it from a security camera. And I'm explaining it to my clients. I'm like, can we look at this situation from a security camera? They'll be like, whoa, all of a sudden they repeat back a totally different story.
Yeah.
I find that so interesting when I just say, look at it from a security camera, because that they could relate to. And then you get a whole nother story. And then I'm like, okay, let's break it down. What are the facts? And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what? I was just making it mean this whole thing and it's really nothing.
Analogy. Yeah, I use it from a security camera. I always look at it like my actions. If I was to die and my kid, a video camera me, you know, followed me around the video camera, would my kids be proud? Right? Like, will my kids be proud that I did what I was supposed to do? Because I think we have a responsibility as light workers to bring light, but to also prove like that this stuff is real. And just so when people are super successful in life, they can find their spiritual path. I'm talking about like financially. And then, but people that have the right answers within themselves, they don't need that. However, they should have access to it. And it gives, I call it, you know, I call myself the conscious contractor. And it's like, because I'm bringing light to it. And that's what you're doing. You're bringing light to them and saying, well, the truth is, if you look at it from here, and that's Eckhart Tolle's work, switch to the observer. Mm. Like, who's observing this? Like, there's me arguing with her, but then like, what's actually going on right here? It's a bunch of hurt going into hurt. Okay, so what do I want to do about it?
And it's a bunch of hurt that isn't even occurring in the moment. It's hurt that happened in the past that you're bringing into the present, which causes so much pain, because sometimes we just need to accept it. We can't change it. We can't change anyone, but we can change ourselves in a beautiful way.
Yeah, there's a book one of my mentors gave me. It's called The Precious Presence. It's a great book for your kids, no matter the ages. And it talks a lot about that present moment.
Yeah. I think that's the only moment we have. The only moment we're in.
Well, when you get into quantum physics, like that's all that exists. Like, we created time.
Right,
we created all those things. So like, everything is happening now. Right now. And it's like, again, the complexities are too big for us to understand it. So we have to let go and have faith. And like, timeline in the entire universe, it's there already. I just have to get into the vibration.
And what's happening today is connected to something we don't even see, because we don't see the whole picture. Only God does.
Correct.
We don't see anything. So that's why I really lean into acceptance and faith and not getting caught up in so much of the little things.
It's always the mosquitoes and not the bears that'll scare us out of the woods.
Oh my gosh. Yes. The visual, right? On that. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And like, you can't see the forest when you're blocked by the tree. And so it's like, all right, what's really going on here? Like, this is building endurance and this is building, you know, resilience and this is building, you know, it's all of it. So like, I believe, you know, we come into this world to create an experience to be able to, maybe what if it's forgiveness? Like, what if your point in this planet really was to learn how to forgive? So what is God going to do? He's going to give you a bunch of things that you need to forgive people for, right? And I'm like, this all is happening for me, not to me, but what am I creating and where am I creating it from? Because all of the timelines, everything already exists. Okay, cool. Like, what do I choose in this moment? What do I choose?
Yeah, it's all about in that space.
Choose to be present.
Yeah, it's all about in that space. Just ask yourself better questions. Give yourself a shot. It's never too late to just keep growing, keep evolving, keep expanding into this beautiful life that we get to experience. It's such a privilege.
Yeah, I mean, that's 40 is so young. Like, I remember looking back, like when, you know, people are like, I remember people being 40 when I was a kid, and I'm like, that is like the oldest dirt. And I straight up feel like I'm like, I'm 15. And I was like, well, I had to probably save more for retirement. Like, I feel like I'm 15. Like, oh, and so then I started to look at those kinds of things. And it's like the way science is progressing, what we're experiencing, we may never die. Like, that's the crazy part. Like this Neuralink stuff that they got going on, like, they're going to be able to download your consciousness. Like, how does that work? Right? Oh, and it's like, yeah, we're
next level. I don't know anything about that.
We're teetering. Yeah, well, you're teetering. And then I don't know if I like it or don't like it, but I just, I know with what's going on. Like, it's literally what's going on. And they say if our generation can live until they're like 70 years old, that the medical field will advance so far that we'll be living into like the 200s plus.
Okay. Let's see. That's interesting.
Some people say they don't want to live that long. And I'm like, yeah, dude, everybody wants to live, but everybody says they're afraid to die, but yet nobody wants to live. And I'm like, look at this paradigm here. Like, what are we stuck in? I don't want to be stuck in the middle anymore, right? Like, I want to let go.
Stuck in the middle. Yeah. So many are stuck in the middle. So what's one thing that a person who feels stuck in the middle can do to kickstart their momentum?
Hire them early to coach them and inspire them to, you know, I'm a huge advocate of coaches, and if you can cut a check for a problem, you no longer have the problem, right? And so the problem, like, I grew up in a household where everything revolved around money. We didn't have it, right? And so all of my parents' arguments came around money, and I was like, I don't want to deal with that. So, like, let's get rid of that. And then all the real stuff comes up, right? Like, oh, like, this insecurities and all this. And if you have the money, you can blame that as the problem. Now I'm the victim. So if you're stuck and you really want to kick charge it, start spending time alone, right? Start isolating yourself and really stop and start to become aware of the sensations in your body. Really start to figure it out. And then as you're figuring it out, be curious with it. Be super curious. Don't be critical. Well, I can't meditate. Or like, what do you mean you can't meditate? Like, I sit there and I have racing thoughts. I'm like, are you thinking about your thoughts? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, then you're meditating. Like, there's no, like, that's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Like, the fact that you're being aware that you have racing thoughts is the fact of meditation. And stop judging yourself. Experience it. Okay. Awareness back. Okay. Focus on your breath. Okay. Now I'm meditating. I'm present. Okay. Cool. Right. Then you'll have that thought. And you'll have that thought, and if you can string together 5, 10, 15 seconds, start noticing how you perceive things differently. And that's when things really start to change.
That's so true. It's like, view it as a scientist. Scientists solve problems. Judges send you to jail. So just be the scientist. Get curious.
Yes.
Wow. We covered quite a bit today. It was such a good conversation. I want to... thank you so much for joining us and taking time out of your day. This was just incredible. And can you share anything else you want to share?
No, that's good. I mean, really the best place to get me is on either Facebook mostly, is Instagram. Jeremiah_Campbell. If anybody wants to reach out, I mean, it was an honor and a privilege to come on your show. I'm proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.